Morning, Tefano. Jack Tame in the chair with you on News Talk ZB for our last Saturday morning together, for this year at least, for 2017. And my guest this morning is a literary rock star, a global phenomenon in the world of children's literature. You may know David Walliams from The Tally. Of course, he's the comedian who created Little Britain. He's the judge who sits next to Simon Cowell on Britain's Got Talent. But to millions of kids, he's a wonderful author. He's an incredible author, up there with J.K. Rowling and Roald Dahl. His books have sold more than 20 million copies worldwide and have been translated into 53 languages. David has a new book called Bad Dad. Have a listen.
Roar went Dad's car as it sped round the dirt track. Frank's father was a banger racer. It was a dangerous sport. Cars would smash into each other. Bang, wallop, crunch, as they zoomed round and round. Dad raced an old Mini that he had souped up himself. He had painted a Union Jack on the car and named her Queenie after a lady he admired, Her Majesty the Queen.
Unsurprisingly, Bad Dad is topping bookseller lists right around the world. It's the most wished-for book on the Amazon website. I sat down and spoke with David Walliams this week.
Good morning.
20 million. 20 million, that's what the gold writing on top of Bad Dad says. That's the number of books apparently you have sold. Why do you keep on writing? Do you need to keep on writing?
Well, all those books were bought by one person.
Oh, really?
They bought all 20 million copies. It was Simon Cowell and he burnt them.
I thought you were going to say it was your mother.
I do need to keep writing. Well, I mean, look, I don't think anyone, just because they have success, stops what they're doing. Mm. Look at people who are super, super successful, thousands of times more successful than me. Like, I just recently saw Paul McCartney in concert in Australia. That man has got nothing left to prove, is he?
No.
I mean, he's one of the Beatles, one of the main ones. If he wanted to just sit at home, he'd still be Paul McCartney. People still worship him. Yeah. But he wants to get out and do it. And in my small way, I want to do the same thing.
There's a funny part of human psychology, really, isn't it? Because when you don't have your level of success or Sir Paul McCartney's level of success, you think, wow, man, if I got to the point where presumably I didn't need any more money to survive or I didn't need to graft away and have deadlines or the pressure of employers hanging over me, I would throw it all in and I would sit on a beach somewhere.
I think there's two reasons for that. One is most people are not lucky enough necessarily to do a job that they really love. Mm-hmm. And second, people do think about their life being transformed by winning the lottery, something like that. So therefore, I can understand why if you had a job you didn't like and you just like to jack it in tomorrow if you had loads of money, I get why you'd think like that. But obviously, when you're a creative person, it's not quite the same. You know, you're not really driven by money. I don't even ask my agent what I'm getting paid for things unless it's something I don't want to do.
In which case you say triple.
I go, well, how much is it? Oh, well, I mean, could they come up with some more and maybe think about it? And I kind of hate myself. Every time I've done anything for money, it's always gone badly wrong.
That's interesting.
And things that I've done just purely for the love of it have gone a lot better.
What has gone badly wrong for you?
Well, so much. Where to begin? Well, you know, TV shows I've done that I know probably, are not quite going to work out brilliantly, but there was a good pay package at the end of it.
I suppose TV shows?
Like, well, I don't want to name them, and it's like mean to the people who worked on the show, worked really hard, you know. But you see it sometimes, don't you? Like big movie stars, you know, you can sort of think, oh, they're slumming it a bit, aren't they? You know, they're in some silly movie. But I'm really proud of the success of the books. It's amazing it takes me around the world because the books have been translated into like 53 languages. And it was amazing because I didn't set out to be an author.
Yeah.
I set out to be a comedian, and one day I hope to achieve that aim. But in the meantime, the books have been incredible, and there's kids of like 10 years old who weren't alive when we were making Little Britain, so don't know me for that. They just know me as an author.
I also don't think you can understate the effect that writing stories that are influential for children has on their lives. I look back to when I was a kid and the stories I loved most then, I really think they actually had a profound effect.
You can change the way people think or feel through a book or a movie. What was the first children's book you read yourself for your own pleasure?
Frog's Holiday.
Frog's Holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not the most complicated book in the world. You know, I mean.
Well, what was a book that you read as a child that didn't involve a frog?
Okay.
That you feel was shaped you in some way?
Do you know
way?
What? Going Solo.
Ah, Roald Dahl. His like second autobiography.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful book, as is Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, wow. That's a great book to mention. I mean, for me, the first book I really loved was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's an interesting one because it's quite a moral book in a way, because all the sort of bad children get punished and don't get to inherit the chocolate factory. But Charlie, who's from this very humble background, who can barely afford to buy a Wonka bar, he gets it. So I suppose it does inform you in a lot of ways, doesn't it?
Do you try and weave those similar morals through your stories?
I think the book's got to have a point.
Mm.
I don't think of myself as a great guardian of modern morality, but there's definitely a point to the books, because I think if you're going to take children on this journey, and for a lot of kids to read a book that's, you know, 50,000 words is quite a big effort. I mean, some kids devour it in a day, and other kids are probably reading it over months because they might do a chapter each night before they go to bed. So yes, you've got to have a point, but for me, the point doesn't come first. The story comes first. And then I think your theme will emerge from that. I never sit down and think, right, I'm going to write a book today about a cross-dressing boy and I'm going to tell everyone that they need to accept that. It just came to me as a story first, the boy in the dress.
Yeah. I think too that, and I'm sure you probably grow tired of the constant Roald Dahl comparisons, but there is a delicious wickedness in your storytelling that makes them kind of addictive. Your story is quite addictive for children.
I hope so. I mean, I think you can't, if you admire someone, it's a mistake to copy them, but you can be influenced by them. And the thing I think was so brilliant about Dahl's books is they were the kind of books that you felt were a bit forbidden.
Mm.
At the beginning of The Witches, he said, this is a book about real witches, not witches on broomsticks with black cats. These witches kill children. I mean, I think that's the first page. I mean, it's absolutely chilling.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can't wait to read on. I mean, and he also says, it could be your auntie, it could be your teacher. I mean, it's incredible how he draws you in. So, but the book feels forbidden.
Yeah.
The book feels like one you have to read under the duvet with a torchlight. And I think that's the kind of spirit I try and capture, whether I succeed or not. That's for other people to decide. But I definitely want the sense they're forbidden. And they're not, these books hopefully are not patronizing children. They're not twee. A lot of people come to me with, you know, books, children's books they've written. And it's incredible how many people just have really twee ideas that I think most children would find quite dull. And very rarely do they remember being a child and how you always wanted to watch the film you weren't allowed to watch, the TV program you weren't allowed to watch, the book you weren't allowed to read, right? The music you weren't meant to listen to. That's all you were interested in as a child.
Yeah.
And I bet when you were about 11 or 12 years old, maybe like me, you wanted to watch Scarface.
Of course.
And someone at school, they've seen it. What's it like?
We had It the Clown for my 12th birthday party DVD, which was a very, very bad call. Particularly irresponsible moment of parenting on my parents' behalf. No, that's a good point. Does the creativity you experience when you're writing differ to that from when you were writing Little Britain?
It is, because with Little Britain, it was the two of us writing it all at the same time in the room together, which is brilliant. And I think that is a great way to write television comedy, because you're trying to make yourself laugh, each other laugh. And if you're performing it as well, you're acting it out the whole time. Writing a book is a bit more intimate, really, a bit more personal. And I don't think you can think of many books written by two people, because that just doesn't happen, does it?
No.
Whereas teams of people often write comedy. So it's a lot more of an intimate process, and the relationship between the author and the reader is very intimate. So I think you really need to be really alone with your thoughts and going down a much more sort of singular path than you do when you're writing a comedy
show.
But
also the nature of the characters. I mean, you obviously, in the space of a book, you have time to develop a character and a storyline much more. But they're also not at all relatable to anything we saw on Little Britain.
No, I mean, I tried to capture the spirit a bit, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have over-the-top characters, and I wanted it to be as funny as possible. But I soon realized there was so much more you could do in a book than you could in a comedy sketch. A comedy sketch is 2 minutes, 3 minutes at the most. You know, set up, you know, middle, end, and that's it. It's over. Whereas in a book, you know, books that would just try and do that over and over again would actually be quite boring. There is time for emotional scenes.
Yeah.
There's time to develop your themes. There's time to make a point.
You mentioned Simon Cowell earlier, and I read an article somewhere that said you look at Simon Cowell for inspiration for your villains.
Well, he's a real-life Bond villain. You just have to think, what would Simon Cowell do? Because is somebody devoid of all human empathy? It's a bit like Voldemort or Darth Vader.
But is that a character he plays? Does he?
No, surely, he really is like that.
To a certain degree, he must himself be a very clever, creative man who says,
yes,
"You know what? If I put this on a little bit and I wear sunglasses indoors, then I think he knows
his image." I was thinking about him the other day because he arrives in a sort of £500,000 Rolls Royce or Bentley. I can't remember which it is. And very few stars now would be that flash.
Yeah.
Because people don't want to be seen to be kind of, I don't know.
Well, it's very hard to even look cool in a convertible, isn't it? Because usually the only people who can afford them are 60 plus. And when you're 60 plus, you don't look cool in anything.
No. But he doesn't mind. He definitely projects an image. But I think he lives it. He lives that image.
Yeah.
Because I ask him what he does on his day off, and he's never doing anything normal.
What does he do?
Well, I don't know. He just has to have a sort of... It has to be all on his terms.
Yeah.
And I think the most normal thing he might do is go shopping at Harrods in London.
Right.
That's the most normal thing. But even then, I think he'd probably turn it into a personal appearance.
Of course. Hunting Dodo by helicopter or something. What do you do on a day off?
I just like to spend time with my son. Or I don't have many days off. Those are the days off. Those are the days where I do no work.
Yeah.
If I'm looking after my son because I just want to spend the whole time with him. Otherwise, I'm often tinkering, writing something or other. I'm very lucky to have lots of, you know, creative, funny friends who really make the time pass brilliantly. So I like to spend time with them. But I'm quite lucky. I know a lot of interesting people. I get invited to some interesting things. And I've got the best part of my life is I've got a beautiful son to spend time with.
Yeah. Congratulations on your success, David. You are a profoundly gifted storyteller. And I know it must be very pleasurable for you to see the support you have on the side of the world.
It's amazing.
Do you get that moment ever where you see like a kid, you're walking through an airport and you see a kid reading your book and you go, I wrote that.
That is quite incredible,
yeah.
And someone buying your book. It's insane. And I think children don't fake it. I think that's the best thing is that, you know, as a grown-up, you often finish a boring book because it's won some major literary prize and you think I should read that. Kids are not like that. They find it boring, they'll tell you. And so the fact that they've taken them to their hearts, and especially kids in New Zealand, because it's bigger here than it is anywhere. I think per capita, it's more. I think most children in New Zealand seem to own one of my books. Yeah.
Do you know, we did a giveaway on our show the last time you were in town. We did a giveaway on our television show, and I think we had something like 30,000 entries in the space of 24 hours for a couple of books.
My word.
Yeah.
That is
people
a lot.
Love it.
Well, that's lovely. It's lovely to be here. I mean, it's an incredible adventure. You know, you just write a story just for the love of it, just because you think, oh, this is an interesting story. I want to tell people this. 10 years later, you're, you know, in New Zealand doing book events, and everyone seems to know who you are. I mean, it's very surreal when I first arrived here a couple of years ago and was getting recognized, because I thought, that's so bizarre. I've never been here.
Yeah.
It couldn't be further away from home, and yet I'm known here.
We don't have many well-paid residencies, but should you ever like to come down under and have a bit of a writing break, we'd be delighted to have you.
It'd be a wonderful place to write.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That is David Williams, OBE, author, actor, comedian. His new book is Bad Dad. As I say, it is already topping bookseller lists around the world and the Amazon most wished for list. Really appreciated his time this week.